Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Claudia. Welcome to the Arizona Area Sponsorship Workshop. This workshop is hosted by the Arizona Area of Al-Anon, and our intention is to make sponsorship more accessible and less mysterious to all Al-Anon members. We will open with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution. Does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic. I've asked Kathy to read a portion of the bookmark, Sponsorship, Working Together to Recover, M78.
Sponsorship is a relationship built on equality, anonymity, and trust, an opportunity for growth for both the sponsee and the sponsor, a benefit at any stage of recovery, a commitment to practice healthy communication, not based on intimidation or demands, an agreement to recover and grow together, not to struggle in isolation, an opportunity for self-discovery, not a teacher-pupil relationship, an experience based on unconditional love, not shame or judgment, a spiritual relationship with no strings attached, a one-on-one relationship, not an exclusive club, a bond focused on Al-Anon's four primary ideas. We are powerless over the problem of alcoholism. We can turn our lives over to a power greater than ourselves. We need to change both our attitude and our actions. We keep Al-Anon's gifts by sharing them with others.
Thank you so much, Kathy. We will be exploring service sponsorship. Segment one will be having a service sponsor. What brought you to get a service sponsor? What qualities do you look for? How is your service sponsor different from your personal sponsor? What kind of matters do you bring to your service sponsor? What are some of the most important lessons you've learned from your service sponsor? And what literature have you studied with your service sponsor? In segment two, we'll talk about being a service sponsor. What is your understanding of the role of service sponsor? In what ways can and do you offer support as a service sponsor? How do spiritual principles enter into a service sponsor-sponsee relationship? What CAL resources do you commonly reference when serving as a service sponsor? And what do you most enjoy about being a service sponsor? Our speakers in order are Richard, Carolyn, Judy, Melody, Kay, and Sue.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Richard. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. It's a real honor for me to be here. When I found out about this series of workshops and tuned in, I can't tell you how much I've learned and appreciated all the other speakers. So I feel like it's a real honor for me to share my experience, strength, and hope on service sponsorship. So let me say that I had just gotten out of the Navy, and I came home, and my both parents had died 1 year after the other from alcoholism, one from cirrhosis and the other from a stroke. And I thought I was okay, and I had reached a point where I'd been miserable for so long, I thought it was normal. And from that space, my brother, who had gotten into Al-Anon after my dad had died, 12-stepped me along with a bunch of other people into Al-Anon. And one of the meetings that we went to was a men's meeting. There were five men, including myself, that met weekly. And after I was there a couple of weeks, one of the people got up and said, you know, I think I've been GR long enough. I'd like to do something else. And he said, oh, and the alternate GR said, well, I guess I'll be GR. And then the program chair said, I'll be alternate. And the GR said, well, maybe a secretary. And they all swapped jobs. And at the end of all the swapping, there was one job left and one person left without a job. And that was the treasurer, and that was me. And of course, they all looked at me, and I just sat there and said, I guess I'm the treasurer. I guess I was too dumb to know that anything different. And said, okay, that's how I became treasurer. And they sort of told me what they were doing. Now, I got to tell you, at this time I had a job. I was a manager in a high-tech computer company. I was very responsible. But when I was in an Al-Anon meeting, I felt like I was about 11 years old because of my just sort of emotional ridiculousness. So there I was. They said, collect the money, pay the rent, and keep track of it. And so at the end of the meeting, I put the money in my left pocket. I got home, and I said, I put all the money on the table, and I said, was the group's money in my left pocket, or was my money in my left pocket, or was it my right pocket? And I had both money in both pockets. Did I accidentally ship the money in either? And I put them out and said, so I can't figure this out. The only fair way to do it is I'll just take the larger amount, and that'll be the group's money. And I said, okay, don't let that happen again. And of course, next week, the same thing happened again. I don't know how it happened, but it seemed like several months go by, and I was a total disaster. I didn't know how much was mine, how much was theirs. And I started thinking, I put so much extra money, and the program's ripping me off. How dare the program rip me off? They're putting all this extra money in. And then the next night I was thinking, I'm screwing the program. If they ever find out, I am really trouble. I won't be able to go to this meeting anymore. And I said, the only way I can do this is I'll have to be the treasurer for this group forever, because that's the only way they won't find out. And of course, 3 months later, they decided somebody got up and said, oh, I'm tired of doing this. And they switched around. And I said, oh my God, in some way, I was relieved because I wasn't treasurer anymore, but the last thing I wanted to do was have someone find out how bad it was going to be, and they were going to make fun of me and all the things. All my head was just filled with all the disease, you know, going crazy. And the person came up to me and said, I said, oh, I really messed up. And he said, well, just give me how much you have and that'll be fine. Huh? What? It was like I was leaning against something and it got taken away and I fell over. And that was my first experience without a sponsor, without a service sponsor. But I came, you know, like I came into things where I wouldn't in the regular meeting. Like I came in direct connection with my shame and my unworthy sort of screw up, my ability to be alone and have secrets. And so I got surprised and I got relief, but I got like this realization that I wouldn't have had otherwise. You know, a realization about myself. And that to me was like part of a wake up, say, oh, the service is pretty cool. I mean, I hate it, but it's also pretty cool. I didn't like all that suffering I put myself through, but I learned something I wouldn't have learned otherwise. Now, a few years later, I moved out to Worcester and they had a telephone service and, you signed up for slots and I signed up for a slot. And I have ADD, so I get distracted, and I'm blah, blah, blah. And then I look up, it's 15 minutes after the slot has expired, and I said, oh, how could I do this? I'm sure the people who would call in, they'll never come to Al-Anon because of me. I was the worst person. I'm walking around my apartment swearing at myself. The last thing I want to do is call my sponsor, but, you know, some voice says, you should call. I know what he's going to tell me, and I don't want to do what he tells me. I just want to sit here and swear at myself and tell myself how bad I am and how careless I am and how uncaring. And, oh, gee, and I finally call him up, and he says, here's what you do, Richard. You call up the service. You don't apologize. You don't get down on your knees, because that's what I want to do. Get down on my knees and apologize forever. He said, no, you just get down. You just call them up and say you missed it and ask for a new date. And so that's what I did. and there was nothing other than that. And he said, make sure you make that date. And that was like something a sponsor could tell me that maybe a service sponsor wouldn't. After that, I also got sort of 12-stepped into being an ALA team sponsor. And I think that's when I really learned about, you know, it's still back then, I don't think they all that concept of service sponsor. I don't never even heard of it. But what I did know is I knew I was a terrible ALA team sponsor. I knew I was never going to be a great ALA team sponsor. But I knew the two coordinators who I just absolutely loved, Ginny and Phyllis, they were just absolutely the kind of intuitive sponsors. You know, something like this in the sponsorship, ALA team sponsorship guide, it talks about different kinds of sponsors. There's some sort of sponsors that are just like, they just lift you up, they're inspiring, and they just have an intuitive sense of what to do, and they always seem to have the right answers, and they're friendly and kind to you, and you just love them. And then there's the sort of sponsors that are stable and reliable. You always can count on them. They don't talk too much. They're quiet, but they open the door, unlock the door for you, let you in. And then there's the kind that, sort of like me, that think that the brain is, you know, like when I first was in Al-Anon, I thought I was going to be rookie of the year. I was going to memorize all the literature, and I was going to quote it at every meeting. And that's what I did. And everybody would come up to me afterwards and say, Richard. And I said, yeah, yeah. They said, Richard, keep coming. But I thought that the program was all about, you know, the books. If I could just read the books and the words, I would be okay. And like an Alateen, that was, I had to keep pulling myself back from that, because if I could just tell these kids, you know, the right words, they would get the program and they wouldn't be talking about their love life. They'd be talking about, you know, what's important. And I just have to do that. And the trouble with that is you tend to wind up being dominating. And I think, there's this wonderful, section in that Alateen where it talks about, you know, what really good sponsorship is about learning to lead without dominating. And that was something I had to learn. There's a section, and so I mean, when I tell you that, you might think there's this question in the guide here that says, how did you choose your service sponsor? And you might think, well, I chose them because they were competent. They just had all the answers for them. But, there's a section in, How Al-Anon Works, section 14 on service. It is my favorite section in all of Al-Anon's literature. And it's on service, but you know, the word service isn't the one that's used the most. If you read that section, there's one word that's over and over and over again used, and this, the word is love. And it talks about how, that unconditional love is something that was so foreign to me that, like, it says, like, unconditional love requires practice. You know, it's not easy. It doesn't come easy. It requires practice. And then it goes on to say that service is the practice of unconditional love. And I think that's the most profound statement. And I think for me, when I think about sponsorship and service, I keep that as my foundation, that service is the practice of unconditional love. Lois, and the very last page of Lois Remembers is this wonderful section, because for me, I like it because it really speaks to me. She talks about how, you know, she thinks thinking is the best. You know, that's the highest point of, you know, humankind is thinking like me, reading all those books and becoming Rookie of the Year. That's the way you get the program. And she said, no, I had this revelation, that it's not. It's love. And, there was one of my guys used to tell me, he said, Richard, relax your mind and open your heart. Relax your mind and open your heart. You know, that the heart leads the mind. When you're doing well, the heart leads the mind. And so I would tell you that the reason I was able to speak to those two, Phyllis and Ginny, was not, and the reason I sort of picked them was not the confidence, not first. It was the fact that I got from them, you know, that unconditional love, that I could trust them so much with I could risk being vulnerable and telling them when I didn't know and my questions, because I knew they would handle them with care. And I knew, without that, then it didn't matter how competent they were. And so I would say for me, that's when I, even though I didn't, you know, like wasn't consciously there, I think all the sponsors, service sponsors, and sponsors I picked was that. I got that, this sense of program, that sense of the importance of unconditional love. And also, the other thing that was important to me is humor. If they don't have humor, there's no perspective, and they too were like, they would play little jokes on me. Might like my brother did that too, but that's another story. So, let's see, what else? So after that, that was my first sense of sponsoring and service sponsoring. And then I would say that as I started taking more, you know, area positions, I became a convention chair and a secretary and that sort of thing. I would always tend to pick, for service sponsor, I would always pick the person who had done it before me. And one of those things was that a difference for me between my sponsor and my service sponsor is that my sponsor knows me really well. He knows where I go. He knows my buttons. He knows, you know, and it's always that sense for me anyways. I think I've handled that. This is not an issue anymore. And boom, particularly in the area of service, it hits me right in the face. The other thing I know about my service is that I tend to screw up a lot in service. My character defects that I think I've handled and I've worked and I've turned them over and God's removed and all of a sudden, boom, they're right in my face. Because there's something, you know, in service, there's usually a goal that I'm pushing towards. And that goal drives me out of my comfort zone into stuff that my defects come up all over the place. And so my sponsor usually helps me with that, but my service sponsor knows the condition I'm in. Like when I was a delegate, my first night at the World Service Conference, the day was really great, but at night I started to feel like alone. And that loneliness started coming in, and I called the first person. I had already scheduled a meeting. My service sponsor was Linda, who'd been the previous delegate. She was absolutely phenomenal. She was just like, I've been so fortunate. You know, when I think, right, say I always picked the person who had my job before me. I got to tell you, I've been so fortunate to have the people that have had that has been just fabulous. I talked to her, and the thing about the service sponsor, particularly when she's done the job before, like she said, she could tell me, that's normal, Richard. You know, and that part of me that wants to be unique and whatever. No. My service sponsor knows the job better than I do. She's done it before. She knows a lot of the traps and things that are going to come up. And yeah, for me, it's going to be different because of who I am, but there's also a lot of things that are the same. And so, my service sponsor can say, you know, relax, Richard, everything's going to be all right. And I trust her because she's been there before. You know, she could say things like, you know, you can do this, you know, you can do this. You're really doing a great job. Or she could say, get over yourself and get over yourself and get out of your way. You know, but it's all from the perspective of the job and that I'm telling her about the job. And then what sort of literature? One of the things I learned here one of the past meetings, was someone said they were going over the concepts with their service sponsor. Well, what a great idea. I'd never even thought of that. I got on the phone the next day. I called up my service sponsor, who's the past area chair, and I said, would you like to do that? She said, yeah, that's fabulous. So we've been doing the concepts. In between, I usually call her up, and I start by complaining. I start whining about what everything is going wrong, or, you know, sometimes it's just a technical decision. Can we do this, or who has to vote on that? And she said, well, this is the way we've done it in the past, so I rely on her. But sometimes I'm just saying, oh, I can't believe this person said it this way, and everybody voted against me, and what's going on? And I know I'm really whining when she says, Richard, let's stop and say the serenity prayer. She does that quite a bit with me. So that's that sense of, you know, relax your mind and open your heart. You know, that sense that I get from my service sponsor is that unconditional love. How much time do I have left?
If you could wrap it up soon, that would be good. Thanks. Thank you, Richard.
I timed this before. It was 15 minutes, and now I guess I rolled over. So what else do I want to say? Did I answer the questions? So I did say that for looking at the service sponsor, you know, in service in general, I said, like, it always brings up my stuff. So I got to, my service sponsor and my sponsor both helped me with that. The other thing that a service sponsor really helps me with is, like, my current service sponsor, she has this great ability to ask people to volunteer, and they all say yes to her. And everybody knows this. When she was the area chair, all the positions were filled, and if someone dropped up, if someone had to, how do you do that? How did you do that, Ann? And so I, you know, one of the things, opportunities for me is to learn how she does that. And she had a very, I mean, some places it's really simple. She just said, well, I ask them what they want, not what I want. So I said, oh, okay. I have to be interested in other people, not myself. But it's like, that's the other thing the service sponsor gives me, is I get to learn things that they do well that I don't. And again, I thank you for allowing me to speak, and I'll shut up at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Thanks for being here tonight. Mm-hmm. Next up is Carolyn A. Please unmute yourself, Carolyn.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Carolyn. I live in Hawaii, and so it's still bright and sunny out and daytime here. And thank you for asking me to share on service sponsor. It's one of those things that not everybody gets a service sponsor. However, it's something that once you have one, you're so happy that you've got a service sponsor that you can ask some of those silly questions or share those frustrations with. And it just works out really great. I was looking at the questions and at the definitions, and one of the things, the definition that I found for services says, be available to assist someone. And it didn't say to control them or to do it for them, it just said to assist them. And is the, and also, what Richard was saying, service is the practice of unconditional love. And it allows me to stretch myself and practice the Al-Anon principles while connecting with another person. And I think Al-Anon service always, always, always lets me grow, lets me learn from others, lets me connect with others, and it certainly brings out my defects very easily. So it gives me something to work on. Sponsor, the definition of sponsor that I found was provide support for someone. And I thought, well, that's true. That's exactly what it is. And then I found the bookmark that you were talking about, too. And the bookmark talked about confidential relationships between two Al-Anon members who share their experience, strength, and hope. And I thought, that's exactly what we do in service. You know, it's not the personal recovery, but it's the recovery of all the other parts of my life that I need, that brings me together and makes me whole. And so that to me is very good. I'm kind of a literal thinker, and I'm a retired teacher, so you know me, I got to follow the directions and read the questions. And number one was, what brought you to get a service sponsor? And, you know, any time I have a new service position, because I haven't done it, I don't always focus on what everybody else is doing because, you know, the world revolves around me. And so whatever job I'm doing is the most important job in my life. And then, in 3 years, we get a new job, and it's like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? I just learned that old job finally. And so I think, kind of like what Richard was saying, a lot of times the service sponsor is someone who's done the job before me, has had experience, and somebody that I respect in the Al-Anon program. The other thing, I wrote a note here that said, service is not for sissies. And for any of you that have done service, you know that the minute you do service, You open yourself up for criticism from anybody and everybody. And, you know, no matter what. And so I had to kind of get a thick skin and know that I couldn't take everything personal. And the other thing I noticed, what brought me to get a service sponsor was that it gave me confidence in my new position, in my new service position, so that I could do a better job because I had somebody that I could kind of discuss it with. I'm a verbal thinker. And, you know, some people can go in the closet and think by themselves. I have to talk it out. I have to talk it, beat it to death to understand it. And so that's what a service sponsor does for me, is it helps me understand what I'm doing. And for a service sponsor, I look for somebody that's done it, done my job, that's done a good job of it, that has something that I want. And, you know, it's kind of like a personal sponsor. What do they have? What am I attracted to? And that they have a program of recovery. And so it's very similar to a personal sponsor, I think. And the other question, part of the question was, how is it different than a personal sponsor? Well, you know, a personal sponsor helps me work on my personal recovery. Where a service sponsor, you know, when I'm in service, people don't always know how messed up my life is or was, or no, it still is some days. And, you know, they don't know because all they see is the job I'm doing in service. And they think, wow, you're doing the best job. You're so organized. You're so this, you're so that. And they don't know that I've got 20 papers on the floor over here by my desk. They don't know that, you know, I've looked at 5 books trying to figure out what I think and all those things. Because that's just the way it is, and that's the way my mind works. And what kind of matters brought me to a service sponsor, I need to know, sometimes, you know, you don't always know the idiosyncrasies of your area at the service level. You know your home group, you know what happens in your group, but once you get into service at the area level, it's, you're with a bunch of different people that you're meeting and getting to know. And, you know, by the end of your 3 years, you know them well and you love them just like you love everybody in your home group. However, I found that sometimes it seemed very intimidating because some of those people seem so competent and so good at what they did. Sometimes there was always questions about procedures because in Al-Anon, we don't follow Robert's rules. And so every other group I'd been in, seemed to have those rules of order. And, in Al-Anon, we do it a little differently and I think a little better, really, to be honest with you. And, we can discuss it. And we don't have to get mad at each other. We can have different points of view and then go to dinner and have a great time. And that's wonderful. It really is. And it's something different than what happens in other groups or work or things like that. And the most important lessons that I've learned from service is that patience is a gift that grows. Not everybody thinks like me. Not everybody has the same importance or the same, they don't rank things the same way. And I have to remember that many different views are there and I can take all those different views and incorporate new ideas in what I'm doing. The other thing is that a lot of the answers are in the service manual. And it wasn't something that I could just expose or talk about, you know, off of the top of my head. It was like I learned in Al-Anon that we would go to the service manual to find the answers and where it came from, and what they said and where it was, and quote the page. And then it wasn't just somebody's idea or somebody making up a thought, and that was new because. In the outside world, there's a lot of BSing that goes on, and people have their thoughts, and they put their emotions and their personal take on things. And in Al-Anon, I think we're more black and white and concrete, that we go back and look at the service manual. But I also feel that as in Hawaii, you know, we're kind of isolated from the world. And in other parts of the United States, you know, people go to conferences and they see each other and they get together a lot more often. In Hawaii, I live in Honolulu, and I'm on the island of Oahu. And so the people that I see on a regular basis are those that live on my island. I don't see the people on Maui or Kauai or the Big Island unless we have a area meeting. And so we don't have a lot of connection. And you know, now that technology is so great, we're having more and more, but 10, 20, 30 years ago, we didn't have that. And we were very isolated. And so finding the answers in a service manual, getting together and meeting at assemblies, meeting people that have done the jobs before, I think is very important. Referring to the job description, I think is to me, that's where it's at. We have some people who've been in service over the years, and they never look at their job description. They just make up what they want to do. And it just frustrates me, because I want to take that job description and show it to them or read it to them. You know, I don't do that, but you know, there's times when that's exactly what I want to do. And, you know, so we do have job descriptions for those who want to follow them and those that want to read them. And hopefully, most of them do, but not everybody. We also have the guidelines from the World Service Office, and those are excellent roadmaps of what to do, gives you ideas of what to do with your position, and you can build on it. You don't have to do all of it, but you can do a lot of it and build on it. And looking at what people did before me, you know, going around and asking questions, and picking their brains and saying, gee whiz, what happened? Or what did you learn? Things like that. I think reading the 12 concepts of service over and over and over is good. There's a lot of things in there that I can learn about service and for service for me and how it relates to me and what I can do with it. So I think that the 12 concepts are just vital, and having discussions about them with others makes it more alive and more real, and the depth is there, and we come out with new ideas on how to do things. And then the question is, what literature have you studied with your service sponsor? And again, I think it's the service manual and the guidelines, the concepts of service, and also I've gone through the World Service Conference summaries, and there's some good information in those past summaries where they've had really good discussions at conference on some of the things that we can use within our jobs of service and share them with somebody that we're sponsoring. And or it's a good reference, it's a good review for me. You know, I don't remember everything, I forget it. So anyway, it's good. The other thing is that I think doing service and being a service sponsor, the personal growth that I get from that is so, so important. And what is it? You stretch, it's a growing matter, and it's really watching other people grow and take their new ideas and launch them and just keep moving on. So anyway, it's good. Thanks for asking me to share. Aloha.
Thank you, Carolyn. Thanks for being here tonight. And next is Judy.
Hi, everybody. My name is Judy. and I'm a really grateful member of Al-Anon Family Groups, the Worldwide Fellowship. I'm currently located in Georgetown, Texas. I plan to be here for a while. I guess it's probably the ending place. I lived in Honolulu with Carolyn for many years, so I'll share some of our experiences to make it a little bit different. My home group here in Georgetown is the Hope for Today, which meets on Mondays. And I found the home group as soon as I got here, and I thought it was really important because I've always talked about having a home group. I think it encourages service. Having a home group, it gives us something to be tied to and to be responsible for. So I always talk to people about having a home group, and I just believe that that's something that we don't stretch enough or we don't talk about enough. I came into the Al-Anon program when I was about 1981, and I was in Honolulu at the time. And at that time, Honolulu, we were kind of like a separate organization on Honolulu. We didn't know much about Al-Anon on the other islands. And so service really wasn't a big thing then. We didn't even have group representatives at first. And so it was toward the end of that year that we started to ask people to start representing groups over there. And it wasn't until we got a full-time delegate, and I say full-time delegate because we had people that would volunteer to go to the World Service Conference each year. They didn't really consider themselves as a three-year term delegate. But we had our first delegate in the early 80s, and she was the one that decided that we could be one area. And she explained how Al-Anon was set up as far as service. And she encouraged all the groups to have GRs, and she kind of set it all up herself as far as districts and got GRs to represent different areas on the islands. And so we really didn't know much, and we just kind of went by the seat of our pants. And we had a service manual at that time, and for those of you that were in Al-Anon in the 80s, you'll remember that the service manual was divided into four little booklets. And to us, we didn't know the difference, but we had the four booklets that we would look at and that we sort of shared. And that was the only thing that we really knew about service. But we went to our Al-Anon meetings all the time, and people did volunteer to represent a group. We didn't really know that it was called a group representative. And I agreed to be the alternate group representative, whatever that was. I wasn't going to stick around. You know, you've heard people that talk about coming to Al-Anon, I'm not going to stay around a whole lot. They're just going to come and meet that need that was needed at home to keep the alcoholic sober for a little while. And I just kept coming back, and the first service I did was I kept the key for the meeting room, and I did that for about 5 years. I didn't know anything about rotation of service. You know, we learn these things as we go along. And this, because we didn't have much service, and at that time there was no reference to service sponsors. We didn't have that term come into Al-Anon until mid to late 90s. We talked about sponsorship, and at that time we thought we got sponsors, and your sponsor was also your service sponsor. And it was in the early 90s, we used to hear, I was delegate in 1988 for Hawaii. 88, 89, 90, and it was during that time we started hearing people say, well, my sponsor doesn't do service, so she can't help me in these things. And so it was from that idea that the term came service sponsor, that it was okay to get a second person to be your service sponsor. And so that's how that came about. And it almost seemed like it was being disloyal. You know, you just felt like I had a sponsor and they were supposed to help me with everything, but they didn't know how to do service. So we came out with this term, service sponsor. It wasn't in the service manual for a long time either, but we did have a pamphlet that came out. It was called, well, we had the first one that came out, The Joy of Service, and then the service sponsorship came out shortly after that. And The sad thing is I don't see that piece of literature in too many meetings. I don't see either one of those pieces of literature in too many meetings. And so I encourage people to get the Joy of Service, which is S something. I'll think of it before we get off here. But anyway, what happened when I got my first, what I call designated sponsor or specialty sponsor, is when I was the first year delegate, they signed us delegate sponsors when we went to conference. And back in the 80s, we didn't have internet and we didn't make long distance phone calls, but we corresponded by letters. They assigned a service sponsor, a delegate sponsor to you. And we really didn't know much until we got to the conference, and they usually met us at the door or in the first breakfast that we had and introduced themselves and told us we could ask them any questions. We hardly saw this person. They would sit on one side of the room and we sat on the other. And so unless you had a real big problem, a whole lot of questions, you didn't see much of that sponsor. And that was the same sponsor you had for the 3 years or the 2 years that you were there, because it was usually a delegate that was ahead of you. And then you became a service sponsor, a delegate sponsor to somebody either your second or third year. When I finished with being a delegate, Carolyn followed me, and she was the delegate. So when she was delegate, we never talked about it, but she'd ask me questions. And so that was really the beginning of the first experience, I think, that either one of us had as a service sponsor, interaction with each other. We would talk about things, and at that time when Carolyn was delegate, they had the property was being discussed, and so, you know, there was a lot of interaction between us then, and I would talk about what I knew, and she could tell me what they were talking about. And so that was what we really had, a good experience of working together with each other. It's one of the questions is, what qualities do you look for in a service sponsor? And what I look for is somebody that's done the job. And I want to find somebody that is positive, somebody that has a positive outlook on doing service, somebody that speaks positively about the position. And I also want to find somebody that did the job well. I don't pick them just because they were my friend. I don't pick them just because they were there just before me. But I look at whoever's done the job two or three times within the last couple of years before me. How is the service sponsor different from your personal sponsor today? Well, you know, it's like the two people before me have talked about. I talk about personal things with my sponsor. My service sponsor, I talk about service events. We talk about rooming together. We talk about travel time together. And you know what I've come to realize over the last 10 or 15 years? That I think I've become closer to my service sponsors because I spend so much more time with them, because I'm very dedicated to service and I stay in service no matter where I go. I'm going to talk about another level of service that I usually don't talk about on here because I don't want to repeat too many things that the other two have talked about. I was elected to the Board of Trustees in 2003-2004. And when I went to my first board meeting, I was assigned a board sponsor. And thank goodness, because it was just like everything else. The first time you go to the board meeting, everything is so different to you. The first conference was so unbelievably different, and the first board meeting was very different. And it was very important for me to have somebody to talk to. I didn't want to mess up on my first board meeting. I didn't want to do the wrong thing or say the wrong thing. And we sat together and we talked about things. And by this time, we had the internet, and I sound like so old. When we talk about times when you don't have the internet, it just seems like another whole lifetime ago. But we would correspond through the internet, and we were just starting to do email at that time, and so that was made things a lot easier. I was later elected to be chairman of the board, and this is where I got my most experience that I want to talk about with a sponsor because it was so so meaningful to me. The things that I talk about with my service sponsor, what things I bring to the service sponsor are the how-to questions, and a lot of times I'll brainstorm ideas with people. And I use my service sponsor for that because remember now I've picked somebody that has done the job before me and has done a good job. So when I became service sponsor, chairman of the board, I'll never forget the day I walked into the chair. She came up and told me, "You're going to learn more about yourself than you ever wanted to know." And that was really true because what happened was, you know, when you're on the line and you have any service job, and I don't care what level it's at, when you're sitting in the chairman of an area's chair, when you're sitting in the delegate's place, when you're at the chair of the board, people look to you for leadership. And if you can't give them leadership, they'll just run all over you. The other thing that happens is you're expected to know and you're expected to lead. And if you don't do that, you'll need more than a service sponsor. But the other thing that I learned was things get tough. I'd go to her and we talk about Al-Anon values. We talk about Al-Anon core principles and staying true to who we were. That was just something that I felt very strongly about and so did my board sponsor. The other thing that I've learned in services, and I was told this by one of the very early service people that I worked with, was when the job gets too hard, it's because I'm trying to do it all alone and I'm not remembering to let God in. What literature have you studied with your service sponsor? I can't ever remember studying any piece of literature because, like I said, the service sponsor piece of literature didn't come out until later. But when I discovered guidelines, oh my gosh, it was like a gold mine. We would order them from the WSO and they would send them in a package. And I just thought they were the best thing. I made a notebook and they had every job outlined then. They were a little more basic than they are now. And we hand them out at the different conventions because we thought that was just the best thing in the world. The service manual at that time was getting better. It had started to have more information, and so we really put our nose to that. I've noticed that in the last several editions, I guess started in the 90s, the service manual has started talking about service sponsorship, and it's got a little blurb in there. I've participated in several tradition studies and learned a lot about the traditions, and I've been part of one concept study, and I learned a lot about the concepts, and that was the other thing that I studied with my board sponsor and my the chairman of the board, to include the four warranties, because I also served on the finance committee and had to know about those warranties. When you talk about a ample reserve and you start talking about budgets and that type of thing and paying the rent, you really need to know about the wording and the warranties because people ask you a lot of questions. In summarization, I think sponsorship has been the bridge for stronger, long-lasting, more meaningful friendships. I'm a service sponsor to a lot of people. I prefer to be a service sponsor rather than a personal sponsor because I feel like it keeps me involved and it keeps me current on what's going on. The friendships that I've gotten from sponsoring people in service are far deeper, the longer lasting. And I think people that are in service that you have a chance to work with stay around a lot longer. So I thank you for asking me to share. Service is one of my tender spots I have for Al-Anon, and it just it seems like it's kept me here. And it's made me who I am today. I think without service, I don't think I'd have the recovery that I have and the opportunities and the experience. So I could sell you a service job anytime. Thank you.
Thank you, JD, for being here with us tonight. Hi, Melody. So I'm pretty new to service sponsorship. My sponsor has always been very involved in service work. I actually met her for the first time at an AIS meeting and was very attracted to the way she conducted herself at those meetings, and either during the meeting and before and after. And she's, you know, she's always, she has held positions at all the levels that I have held positions at and ahead of me. So I've never felt the need to have a separate service sponsor. But earlier this year, somebody asked me to be their service sponsor. And then shortly after that, two other people asked me to be their service sponsor. And I thought, okay, God, well, I guess you want me to take a crash course in learning something. And I said yes, but I had to try and figure out, okay, what does a service sponsor do? So I read this pamphlet, the service sponsorship pamphlet, and it talks in a pretty general way about doing things like asking newer people to help set up the chairs and put out the literature, and which I've done that lots of times because that's excuse me. That's what was done for me when I first came in, and that was so important to me. I felt accepted and valued and a part of that. These people allowed me to help out with their meeting. I've encouraged people to chair the meeting. I've offered to sit next to them as they chair it for the first time to help them. I've talked to people about taking various service positions in the groups and being the GR, that sort of thing. The pamphlet also talks about helping people who are in a service position for the first time, which I've done that a number of times with GRs. I love to take new GRs to assemblies with me and help them and guide them, or go to the AIS meetings and do that sort of thing. Invite people to be a part of committees, to work on workshops, to be a part of the district, or, you know, all those sorts of things. And then the pamphlet also talks about working through the traditions and the concepts with a service sponsee, which I had done with personal sponsees. I've worked through the traditions and the concepts a few different times with my sponsor, and had done that with sponsees also. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I guess I've been a service sponsor without really having that official title. But I've always felt like when I hear service sponsor, it's like, what is it about that that's different? Maybe than just being a personal sponsor. And so I talked to my sponsor. I asked her if she was a service sponsor to anybody, and she was not. So I went over the pamphlet with her and said, well, I guess I'm just going to sit down with these people and ask them what it is that they're looking for and work it out with them. I then talked to somebody who was also just starting out with service sponsorship, and she said she had set a particular boundary, and that was that she was not willing to discuss personal issues that did not involve service. She didn't want to be used as a second opinion or, you know, get caught in the middle between somebody and their personal sponsor. And I thought, okay, well, that's something different, and that sounds like a good boundary. And she also said she was only going to meet with the person once a month, which is kind of what I had been thinking too. I felt like, you know, these people had recovery, they had personal sponsors, and I, you know, I didn't really have a whole lot more time than just once a month. So I had those conversations with each of them. Two of them wanted to work through the traditions and the concepts. They had not previously done that. And so for me, working any one of the legacies involves reading conference-approved literature and doing some writing on that, and then just, you know, discussing the tradition or concept with them. So for me, one of my more favorite books has always been Paths to Recovery. I think it does a pretty comprehensive job on all of the legacies, and then there's questions that, you know, can help a person do some writing. The traditions and the concepts in that book they do a great job of how you apply those to the group and to service, as well as a little bit about applying them to your personal life. There's also some great readings in How Al-Anon Works for both the traditions and the concepts, And this year I've gained a whole new appreciation for the 12 and 12. I've been working with some sponsees out of that book, and it's a little, I think a little simpler, easier to for some people to understand that book, and then maybe Paths to Recovery. So there's lots of options out there. I don't suggest any particular one. I leave it up to the person to decide for themselves. I left out the service manual. I've been studying the concepts again this year, and I've used the service manual. There's some really great writings on the concepts in there. It gives a lot of history, background, how this concept, each concept came to be, and then gives some practical situations and how that concept is used. And it really has helped me to see, gain a better understanding of the worldwide fellowship of Al-Anon and, you know, the service at the WSO level, that sort of thing. I've also been using Reaching for Personal Freedom to study the concepts with my sponsor, which is a great book. I have a couple of sponsees that are using it for the traditions right now. However, it's mainly focused on applying the tradition or concept to one's personal life. And it does a really great job of that, of breaking it down and giving examples of how a tradition can be applied to one's home life. But I'm thinking that it probably would not be really appropriate for just a service sponsorship relationship. And so I look forward to hearing what some of the other two speakers have to say about that. So I've been working with those two on the traditions through Path. They both chose Paths to Recovery. In their writing, what I, you know, look for is their ability to apply that tradition to experiences that they've had in service or with their groups. To me, that's where I really gain an understanding. It's not enough just to read a book and say, well, this is what it says or what it's supposed to mean or why we have it. I need to be able to really apply it to a situation to really gain an understanding of it. And so we talk about those things. The third person had already worked through the traditions and the concepts, but she recently entered into a service position that she had never had before, and it was very similar to the one that I have now. And so she wanted to be able to ask me questions whenever they came up. And she didn't want to, set a regular time or anything, so, which I was agreeable to. And so whenever she needs to talk to me, she'll text or email and let me know that she does, and then we set up a time to talk. And what's been really interesting about that relationship is that no matter what the question is, we always seem to end up talking about a particular tradition or concept and how it applies, which I just absolutely love. I gain such a greater understanding of those legacies by, you know, in the moment, in the real situation, okay, well, this is what applies, and this is how it applies, and finding solutions in that way. So I have grown in my own recovery and in my understanding just through that relationship. So that's I think one of the most things I enjoy about service sponsorship in general. I just so enjoy being able to see the growth in somebody, the light come on, especially through service, see a person be able to lift their head up and walk with confidence and participate with confidence and with joy and just, you know, learn and grow from their recovery. As far as the spiritual principles, I think of abundance and gratitude. Service work was the very first tool that I picked up, and it has given me an abundance of recovery. And I want to share that with other people so that they can then gain an abundance of recovery as well. And I do that, I can do that through sponsorship and service sponsorship. And then the other principle would be gratitude. I get to express my gratitude for all of the recovery that I have received by being of service in any way, shape, or form, including sponsorship, both personal and service sponsorship. And so that's all I have to share with you today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Melody. I enjoyed your insights. Can we give Melody a thank you? And next up, we have Kay will be speaking.
Hello, everybody. Well, Melody, I think you were looking at all my notes, because as you were talking, I was going, oh, she said that, cross that off. Oh, she said that, cross that off. Oh, she mentioned those books, cross that off. So I don't want to repeat myself, because you covered an awful lot of what I was going to cover, which is using our conference-approved literature, how a service sponsor isn't necessarily a lifetime commitment, and that a service sponsor can just be, hey, I'll help you figure out how to share your meeting today, which is what Melody has talked about. It can be a one-time thing. And when I started in the program, I didn't understand what service sponsorship was. I thought it was something really big, like, oh, service sponsor. Not realizing that really for me today, I interpret a service sponsor as just someone who's willing to help another member learn how to do a service role or a position because they already know how to do it. Or they've done it. It's that simple. And there isn't a manual. I mean, you just heard Melody share about there's lots of different ways. There's lots of different resources. And I think that's what's key. Because if we had a rule book about this is the only way to tell someone how to be a GR, I mean, oh my gosh, GRs are different. Delegates are different. People who work for the information service, they do it in a new way. So there's a lot of flexibility there. And I like that. I really like that. I, too, have a service sponsor who turned out to end up being my regular sponsor. Now, I got a service sponsor, ironically, because my sponsor didn't have the experience in positions that I was interested in pursuing. And I needed a hand. I was smart enough and had finally gained a little humility in this program to learn to ask for help and recognize, Kate, if you don't know how to do the job because you've never done the job, maybe you should be wise and ask somebody who's done the job to tell you how to do it. And what they learned from it, and then expand from that. And so I approached someone as a service sponsor who was actually speaking at a conference. I didn't even know them. And I heard them talk, and they mentioned something about their service work, and I thought, that's the person who knows what I want to know. And so after the meeting, I swallowed my pride, and I went up to him, and I said, I know this sounds really stupid, and you don't even know me, but would you be willing to be my service sponsor? And she looked a little like, wow, okay, I don't know you. You could be a crazy person. But she agreed to do it. And she found out I am a crazy person, and that's okay. I'm a good crazy. I'm not, not scary crazy. At least I try not to be. But by her willingness to do that, she was able to take me into places within our literature, within our service manual, within our program, and within my own recovery that I could have never gotten to without having had her as a service sponsor. Now, as time went along, my regular sponsor got very sick, and she was unable to be my sponsor anymore. And so I asked my service sponsor, would you be willing to sponsor me as a regular sponsor as well? And she agreed, and I'm grateful for that. That doesn't always happen. I had served as a service sponsor for people who just were brand new GRs to my group. They were nervous. They didn't know much. At least they didn't think they did. Oftentimes, they knew more than they thought they knew. And they sell themselves short. And so when I talk about my answer to what's my understanding of the role of a service sponsor, I think I'm supposed to encourage you. I think I'm supposed to help you see the things you don't see about yourself and bring out your strengths and, help you maybe diminish a little of your weaknesses if you're concerned about them, put them in the proper light. I don't know if you've ever met a member who thinks I could not possibly be a public speaker because I'm not a good public speaker. Well, okay, do you have a story that's your story? Well, yeah. Do you know it really well? Yeah. Well, guess what? You can be a public speaker. And my encouragement for them makes me a service sponsor just for that one little tiny piece. I'm encouraging them to step into sponsorship. So it's helping them play up their strengths and acknowledge their weaknesses and work with that. It's encouraging them to step in the scary stuff and have their back. It's letting them know you're not going to fail because we don't really fail in Al-Anon. We might learn valuable mistakes that other people watch, but we don't necessarily fail. And it's all okay because what I have found in service is most of the time when I'm volunteering for something, most other people are going, oh, hallelujah, that means I don't have to do that service position. So they're happy that you volunteered, and a service sponsor can help them feel okay with that decision. So I think it's encouraging. It's sharing my experience. But I also think it's important, and Melody shared on some of the spiritual principles. For me, I took a different approach. So Melody, thank you for talking about the two that you mentioned, because I hadn't thought about, for me personally, which I would agree, absolutely, the abundance that I get from service in the growth in my program, but also the gratitude. I find you get what you give. And that means I get more when I give back. Now, you don't have to, but I give as a service sponsor because I want other people to get what I have from this program. But when I think about the spiritual principles, some of that for me means what happens in the relationship between me and someone that I am serving in that role as a service sponsor for them. What does that mean? Well, it means I better be open-minded, because I'm going to have people coming at this service position with different ideas than I had. And if all I'm going to say to them is this is the way you have to do it, well, then I probably shouldn't be in that role for me, because one of my character defects is knowing everything. And I know it all, and my way is the only way. So how does that help when you have someone who has a different way of doing things? As a service sponsor, I want to help them find their own way. So I put open-mindedness. That's a spiritual principle for me that has to apply. I put mutual respect. I have to respect that you're doing the best you can and encourage you. You need to respect that I might know something about this position because I've already done it. So if I tell you that's probably not a good idea, it's probably because I found it in our service manual that says, hey, don't do that. That's not a good idea. So some of these things are important for that relationship to work. I think I need to trust them. I think they need to trust me that I'm not going to lead them astray. I think I need to have integrity. Don't play games with them. Don't get a big head. Don't think I have all the answers because I'm your service sponsor. And sometimes we see that in sponsorship, and I think service sponsorship can happen too. Let me manage you. It's not my role. I have the chance to be the DR. Now it's your turn. I'm to guide you and get out of the way. I don't get to puppet you. That's not my role. I also like this unity concept, working together with them so that they succeed, not taking over. And that comes into the spiritual principle of balance. Balance. Guiding, but not over controlling. There's a balance there. I want to give them enough to help them ride that bicycle, but once they're going, I'm going to let go of the seat and hope they hold their own, right? That's the balance. When we talked about Cal Resources, and again, Melody, no kidding, you covered a lot of what I was going to share. The same sort of books. I do think it's important to be available by phone for me. I'm also available by text and email. I meet with people. I stay after a meeting. I go early to a meeting. If you're a new DR, would you come to my meeting and let me know how I'm doing? Sure, I'll do that. But I also have study groups. I have three study groups going right now of people that I'm serving in a service sponsor role with. One of them is someone who actually is new to a GR position, and they want to understand the concepts better so they can apply them. So I'm doing a one-on-one with them every week, and we meet for about an hour and a half. Then I have two people that I'm working through traditions with. We've just done past recovery. Now we're working through reaching for personal freedom so that they get the full understanding of what these traditions mean. And when we get done, we're going to move into the concepts next for them. And then I have another group that I meet with, another two people, that we're doing concepts through reaching for personal freedom and past recovery at the same time. So I've got three groups growing, and all of this is so that they understand the concepts of service, what those can do for you personally, what they can do in your group, and what they can do at all levels of the Al-Anon service structure. With the traditions, I also get my people heavy. If I'm your service sponsor, you're going to have a service manual, and you're going to learn the service manual with me because I think it's important. A lot of the problems that I see that we have in our groups are because people don't understand the policies of Al-Anon that are outlined in the service manual. Now, granted, you know, they're not laws. You're not going to go to jail if you don't follow them, but they're really good guidelines for starting discussions when people have questions. And some of those questions come up to who? The group rep, the district rep, the delegate, the information service rep, any member that doesn't understand why are we doing these things. Well, if you can get them in the service manual, they'll learn those answers, and it's under the policy section and also under the groups at work section. Incredibly valuable information. And two, the concept section in the service manual is fantastic. It has a lot of good information that can help people trying to figure out how do we operate in a structure, how can I be of service to the fellowship and give you the very, very best that I have to offer you while staying true to the principles of our program. Because we got to be careful. You don't want Kate's program. You know, my program was got me here. That's not the program you want. You want the one that got me out of here and into Al-Anon. That's the program that's worth having today. Another tool that I have, and it's an older book, and I like, you know, I have the pamphlet too, Mel, and I really happened before the meeting. This is such a great one on service sponsorship. Ellen, How Al-Anon Works. But there's another book that I use sometimes just for fun, and it's this little guy. It's called The Al-Anon Family Group's Classic Edition, so it was a reprint. Now, what I like about this book, if you're not familiar with it, there are a couple pages in here. Let me get my page numbers here. Page 165 to 180 in this book actually has a section on applying the traditions to group problems. I mean, wow, if you're not quite sure how do the traditions, like what do you do with them? Like I get them, but I don't know what to do with them. Here it is. It's a visual. If you happen to have some of the books that are out of print but have been, you know, remodified, you could have this one. This is the Al-Anon Family Groups, the older version of it. If you had this little guy with the black and the blue cover, it would be Applications of the 12 Traditions to Group Problems on page 65. Why does anybody care about that? Well, I'll tell you, if you're a service sponsor to a group rep who's in a group who's having problems, they're probably going to want to know about that little book. It's not going to have every answer, but it's going to have a lot of your answers. Another tool that I love to use are the Al-Anon guidelines that are found on the website. And Claudia had already given that. I don't know if she put it in the chat, you know, the Al-Anon World Service website. But the Al-Anon guidelines provide you with job descriptions. So if you're in a service sponsor role and you're trying to explain to somebody, this is what this role does, you could take them out to the guidelines. There's more information for them to learn about their position. I also like to reference the World Service Conference summaries. Why do I reference those? Because sometimes decisions that are made in our program years ago are still causing problems for some of our members today because they don't like the decisions that were made. I don't understand why we bought property. I don't understand why we can't do this with Alateen. Well, if you know where to find the answers, as a service sponsor, if they happen to be in a role where the issue's coming up again, like maybe district rep, maybe an area position, if you know where to guide them as a service sponsor, you can lead them to the index on the website of the conference summaries, find the topic, and they can look it up, the history, so that now they can somewhat be intelligent in their response back to a member. And I say somewhat because, man, I try to be intelligent, but sometimes it just falls flat. Sometimes it's not so good, but I really try hard. Anyway, you know, knowledge can be helpful. Our history can be helpful so we don't repeat the same things over and over and over again. So as a service sponsor, I try to give them every resource I possibly can that will enable them to have the tools to answer the questions. Now, as a service sponsorship role, that doesn't mean I'm going to make it better every time they have a big problem. Sometimes whoever's asking is still going to be mad. They're not going to like it, and it doesn't matter what sort of role you're doing in your service position, and that is okay. But at least I can help build their confidence and their self-esteem. And if they get squashed, I can still be the cheerleader that says, man, get back up again. That's just one member. The other 50 of them love you. So, you know, all of that I think is important as a service sponsor. What was our last question here? Let me see here. What do I enjoy? Okay, well, Melody, you said it already. So I'll just follow along with Melody's answer. What do I like most about being a service sponsor? The growth. The growth. I can tell from my own experience, my growth in this program would not have occurred without being in service. I mean, that's just a fact. Sitting in a chair at one or two meetings a week and browsing through my literature, even with a sponsor, is not enough for me. It's not enough for me. And the people that have asked me to be their service sponsors know I'm going to work them hard because that's how I work my program. I believe I have to work a hard, hard program. And by that, I mean get to work. Study the literature, continually to be in the literature, go to meetings, volunteer for things like this, because only through that do I have something to give back. And so if you get people coming to you that know that about you and they know they're going to work hard, they're working hard. So then what I get to see is those fantastic results when they've come through the other side of, oh my gosh, they're the most fantastic district rep you've ever seen. Look at them be a GR, and this was a person who would never open their mouth in a meeting. That's the reward. That is the reward, and that's why I keep doing what I do. And I'm so grateful that early on, people took a chance on me and were willing when I was nutty when I came in, and still sometimes nutty, to say, okay, yeah, I'll work with you. because it has really changed my life. Thanks for letting me participate today.
Thank you. Thank you, Kay, for your experience and the ideas you shared with us. Can we give Kay some love and thumbs up? And our last speaker is Sue. Take it away, Sue.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for inviting me to this amazing, amazing workshop and journey that we have all taken together. You know, Kay and Melody, I've got nothing left. So all I can do is like share my experience as, you know, what it was to be a service sponsor, what it is to be a service sponsor in that role. And for me, I couldn't even consider being a service sponsor until I really had my sea legs, so to speak, of this Al-Anon program under my belt. So I had to work through a lot of things with my personal sponsor to really put the focus on me and to understand who Sue was before I even considered, you know, delving into those waters of service and service sponsorship. So for me, it took some time. But I, you know, when I reflect, what I experienced is a lot of what Kay and Melody shared, that, you know, someone at some point said to me, "Hey, Sue, why don't you try this? Hey, Sue, you know, you might want to consider, you know, doing this position." You know, and when group positions would come up for discussion, you know, people would say, "You know what, Sue should do it." And I'm like, "No, Sue should not do it." Sue, no. Because by the time I got to Al-Anon, I had such a distorted sense of what responsibility meant that I didn't want to take on any kind of an assignment because I was afraid I was going to mess it up. Because it was all of that over sense of responsibility that got me into Al-Anon to begin with, because I was always doing everybody else's stuff. So I was very reluctant to become an active participant in service initially. But you guys, you know, you guys just kept hooking and roping me in. So, so here I am, you know, and I'm grateful for that. So I learned as part of my own personal journey in recovery that I suffered from a disease of incredible short memory. And because Al-Anon is a wonderful program of repetition, I need to be reminded constantly of all of these resources that continue to be at my fingertips, that continue to be helpful today, and especially that M78. And that nothing that we do in Al-Anon is about it being a rule and you're supposed to and the should, the could, and the would. You know, I try very hard today not to use those words in my everyday language, because it reminds me of the way I was, where I was the person that was governing, commanding, you know, being the drill sergeant and all of those things. So I try very hard to think about, you know, this is a we program, and, you know, I do not have all the answers, nor do I want to have all the answers. So that sponsorship journey in service is exactly that. It's a journey. It's about both people understanding what it is we're trying to do, how it is we're trying to fulfill any particular kind of a service position, whether it's, you know, welcoming a newcomer into the meeting and explaining to them how this program works, whether it's, you know, giving my phone number to someone because they said something that touched me and I want to be able to connect with them more. You know, all of those things are part of, you know, service sponsorship for me. And that same support is offered to me as well as what I provide and I'm able to provide with others. But I can't start that journey if I really don't have a sense of myself. So my personal recovery still has to take precedence in making sure that I am not lapsing into previous behaviors because service sponsorship has now come into play. It's no different than being a personal sponsor. Sometimes the focus moves a little bit, and that has been my experience. I didn't realize the importance of service sponsorship until one of the service roles that I had at an area level, and it was involved in a convention planning committee. And that was a process. You know, it helped me to understand that, you know, it's one thing to do public outreach on this committee. It's something else to be the registration chair on this committee. It's something else to be the chairperson and coordinator of this committee. So service sponsorship started to be like those building blocks for me to feel confident enough to say, I'd like to stand for this coordinator's position. You know, that's what started giving me the self-confidence, the feelings of self-worth, and the feelings really of self-love to be able to do different things and to think outside the box on how I can do things beyond the group level as well as within my Al-Anon group. You know, and I'm really, really grateful for all of those service opportunities. Something that, you know, that sticks into my mind vividly is I was a former area Alateen coordinator. And that was when it was, you know, right after the motion came out and how we had to do these trainings and share all of this information, you know, that prompted me to want to learn about different things, about service and our structure, because up to that point, I was looking at Al-Anon this way. And I needed to start looking at Al-Anon this way. And it really opened up my mind to different possibilities and different things that can be done in the name of Al-Anon service. And it was there, and I'm glad, Kay, that you brought up that book about the classic edition, because there is a wonderful quote in there from Lois W. about obedience to the unenforceable. And it's, you know, and I couldn't figure out what that meant. But that principle about being obedient to what is written in our literature, not what Sue thinks, not what Sue wants, but what is best for Al-Anon, is how that all started to kind of mesh together. And it helped me in my role as a service sponsor, as being an example to those people who want those members who wanted to serve and maybe were afraid, because many members over the years have said to me, you know, if it wasn't for what I heard you say at the assembly or at the AWSC meeting or in the district meeting, I would have never considered raising my hand to serve in this way. That is also being a service sponsor, being that messenger and that vehicle of that message. I never realized how important that was, because I was just being me because you had taught me how to be me as an Al-Anon member, and getting involved in service. So the spiritual principles for me started to shift a little bit about, you know, presuming goodwill and being obedient, you know, to the unenforceable, and about being responsible. You know, what does it mean to be responsible now? You know, it's not that distorted sense of responsibility that if I do something wrong, I'm going to break it. But now it's the responsibility of making sure that Al-Anon is here for the person who doesn't even know that they need it. And that is what's so, so precious to me. And being able to be involved in meetings on all different kinds of platforms, you know, how this pandemic has made all of us think really, really, really broadly and outside the box, you know, holding conventions virtually, holding area meetings virtually, holding all kinds of types of informational sessions virtually, has been something that I don't think any of us, I know I would have never thought of, not even 3 or 2 years ago. But now that, you know, we are in this position, and to have it see how we have evolved and how we have been able to embrace these different kinds of things is, you know, a service sponsorship opportunity for all of us. And it is just nothing short of amazing to me to see how that responsibility to make sure that Al-Anon is still here no matter what happens. No matter what. It's just, I get overwhelmed with gratitude. I truly do. I truly get overwhelmed with gratitude when I have this opportunity to serve Al-Anon and to give back what has been so freely shared with me, whether it's as a personal sponsor or a service sponsor. And to know that there's no rules, you know, all of this stuff that's written is the guideline of how to do it. It's about the how-to. The what is up to me and what I put into it, you know, and how I, whether it's me reaching out to someone who I think would be a good opportunity for them to sit up and serve, whether it's me reaching out and asking a question for somebody who is doing something in a particular service position because I want to know more on how they're doing it. Because some people, it just seems to come so easily, and other people, I can see how sometimes they struggle. And it's interesting because in my relationship with my personal sponsor, what has evolved is, you know, we have this sponsor-sponsee relationship on a personal level to work through those steps. And what has evolved is that she has lots of questions about service because her service opportunities are different, and she's nervous. And so she's asked me to be her service sponsor. So I would have never expected something like that to evolve from that kind of a relationship, you know. And it's about how we apply, how I apply these principles, how I talk to people, how I learn how to listen to people, because service sponsorship, if nothing else, has really taught me how to listen and to just listen to the words, not listen to the tone of voice or the inflection and you know, get into, you know, taking inventory of what I think they're trying to say, but just trying to focus on the words that are being said and not to judge. And I try to do that as a service sponsor, as, you know, we journey together in this process of learning and understandings. You know, my go-to pieces of literature for service sponsorship is first the service manual. Next for me has always been that Reaching for Personal Freedom workbook. It is amazing how I'm able to, once I read something in the service manual and then go to the concept section of that workbook, that it helps me really connect those dots. And I try to do that with people that I am involved in a service sponsor relationship as well. You know, and I'm grateful for that opportunity. You know, and as it was said, you know, what I enjoy most about this process is how much I continue to grow. You know, it keeps me humble. You know, just because I've been around a few 24s, it doesn't mean I know anything more or less. It even more breaks down any type of a hierarchy that I have, you know, nestled in my brain about, well, I've done this and I've done that, so I'm more than you or less than you. It is, you know, we are not more or less than anybody. You know, we are a fellowship of equals no matter what it is we do, no matter what title and service that I have. And I'm grateful for that opportunity to continue to serve, you know, in my groups and at the local level in whatever way that I can. And it is truly, truly, truly a privilege to be able to serve as a service sponsor, as well as to have someone ask to be a service sponsee. So I am truly grateful for this opportunity, and I'm going to kick it back to you guys. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you to our speakers for sharing. We will now close with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.